Stephen Schiff is probably one of the very few film critics, who knows, maybe the only one, who chose Fatal Attraction as the worst movie of 1987. He reviews new movies each week for Fresh Air. Today we learn more about him as part of our continuing series of interviews with Fresh Air contributors. Stephen wrote about film for The Real Paper and The Boston Phoenix before he became critic at large for Vanity Fair magazine. I wanted to know about the very first movie that he saw in a theater.
It was The King and I. And it was absolutely terrifying.
That's great. Why? I don't think of that as a scary movie.
No, well, that's just the point. You know, a lot of parents come to me and they say, can I take my children to this? Can I take my children to that? And I almost never know what to say, because I think this huge image in this darkened room with all these strangers is very strange to any child of a certain age. And I was very young. I don't know how young. I think a very, very scary movie to an adult might be quite benign to a kid. And what's benign to an adult might just scare the living daylights out of a kid.
Well, are you sorry that your parents took you to that movie?
No. It was also, I mean, it was, just to remember it, it makes it a very profound experience. And I became addicted to movies pretty young. And all the more so because there was a certain period of time where there were a lot of movies that my parents didn't want me to see. And, of course, whenever you forbid something, it's tantalizing.
What were some of those forbidden movies that you went to see anyways?
For some reason, what stands out is Night of the Iguana. Don't ask me why. I think Tennessee Williams was considered just slightly dirty. And that, of course, made me desire it all the more.
You grew up in Colorado. Was it in a city, in a small town, a suburb?
It's a small town. It's a town called Littleton, midway between Denver and Colorado Springs.
Did you have access to movie theaters that you could walk to?
Yeah. There was a movie theater called The Woodlawn, which is now a huge liquor store. And it was a sort of primal right that we would go on Saturday and we would throw things at other people sitting there watching movies, and we would whoop and yell, and we would throw Red Hots up into the light because they looked like burning matches falling down when they hit the light. And about halfway through every show, the owner of the theater, whose name I remember, it was Breck Fagan, would get up on the stage, and he would shut down the movie, and he would harangue us and scream at us for about 20 minutes, and we would become very silent, and then he would start the movie again, and then we would throw Red Hots at the screen and do all those other things all over again.
Not film critic behavior.
You'd be surprised.
You've played in rock bands. What kinds of bands did you play in?
Oh, I had all kinds of bands, and the ones I liked played basically my music or the music a friend of mine who was the guitarist, I was the pianist.
What kinds of songs did you write?
Well, I don't know what you'd call it. Progressive rock, I suppose. They had an unusual number of chord changes for rock, and they sometimes dared to change rhythmically. And they, you know, their lyrics tried to do things that rock songs didn't often try to do.
I'd love to hear one of your lyrics.
You won't.
That's what I figured. Okay. Did you wear leather pants or anything like that when you performed?
You know, it's awful to admit, but from time to time, I wore leather pants. I sometimes also affected neck scarves. You know, it was pretty ugly.
How did you drift into film criticism?
I knew I could write, and I wanted to be a writer. And I wanted to make a living at it, which excluded immediately certain forms. And it seemed to me at that time, now we're talking about the mid-70s, mid to late 70s, when there's a kind of ferment around film and film criticism that I think has mostly vanished. There was, and you may remember the term, a film generation, a generation of people, and I was part of that generation, that had fallen in love with film rather early and had become insatiable. And in that time, it seemed that writing about movies would be a way of writing about the world, because after all, when you write serious criticism about movies, you can write about history, you can write about sociology, you can write about narrative, you can write about characterizations, you can write about acting, you can write about purely visual elements. I mean, there's a whole lot that could go into it, and people were actually reading film criticism in that way at that time.
When you're watching the movie, do you want to let it wash over you, or are you really kind of thinking a lot as you're seeing it, and even taking notes?
Well, I take a lot of notes, and when I've taught film, I've had students in screenings take notes, and they always say, "Well, we can't because the lights are off." And I say, the first qualification that any film critic needs is to be able to write in the dark.
Yeah.
And I take a lot of notes, and I'm always, I mean, this sounds pretentious, but there's almost a kind of zen you have to acquired, because you do have to clear your mind of certain preconceptions, and you do have to get in a state where you are at once analyzing and allowing yourself to be caught, allow yourself to be sort of taken in completely. If you let the film wash over you completely, and you're not thinking of your responses as you're responding, then you're really not going to know what you felt. You're going to come out and just make up something. And I think 99% of the critics do that, because it's a very active process watching a movie if you're monitoring your responses and trying to figure out what's creating them.
You know, I'm sure as a critic you want to make sure that your responses to a movie are really honest and really your own. Do you ever read other film critics? Because I figure on the one hand you're dying to see what they have to say, and on the other hand you just really want to, you know, protect your responses and make sure that they're not affected by other people.
Yeah. Well, I'm in a situation now where I write for a magazine that has a 3-month lead time.
Wow.
So I'm almost always seeing the movies long, long before anyone else. When we all come out, I'll read the other critics and see what they have to say. But obviously, at that late date, it doesn't affect my judgment of the movie.
Well, that's really interesting, because you're seeing the movie in a kind of vacuum. You don't know what the buzz is going to be or what the consensus is going to be. You can see Fatal Attraction and not know that it's going to play for, you know, more than 6 months or however long it's played.
Well, that's right. And I've often had a problem with this sort of rule of journalism that we have to be timely with movie criticism, because I think and maybe you'll disagree, but I think that that the readers of movie criticism often want to read it not the day the movie opens, but a few weeks later, because they haven't seen the movie yet. And I find maybe you don't feel this way, but a lot of readers tell me that they want to read the piece after they've seen the movie. They don't want to read it before.
That leads to something else. Do you ever feel that you in your role as movie critic are seen as a pawn by the movie industry?
Well, I think a lot of people are very willing pawns, and I'm not a very willing pawn. You know, I don't write for the quote ads, and in fact, I make myself pretty hard to quote most of the time.
Intentionally?
It's not intentional, but the kind of things, it's very easy to get into a quote ad, and I can tell you exactly how to do it. There are two rules I've noticed almost always work. One, you mention one, preferably two, other huge hits that this movie compares favorably to. For instance, you say, you know, The Dead combines E.T. and Tootsie. Well, now, if I had said The Dead combines E.T. and Tootsie, no matter how outlandish a statement that is, and you'll admit it's pretty outlandish, I would have gotten in the quote ad for The Dead, I promise you. Or the other thing you say is you refer to Oscars. You say, and I mean, this is the crazy misleading way of doing it. You say, you'll be hearing from it at Oscar time. But anyway, I mean, good. Such phrases just wouldn't appear in good writing. And you know, I keep them out of mind for that reason.
Well, you started writing about movies during a period that you thought was very exciting.
Yeah.
Do you feel cheated at all that now, now that you're actually making a living writing about movies, that they're not as good as they used to be?
I actually began writing about movies after the peak period, which was really the early 70s, and I began writing in the late 70s. I mean, I've been writing about movies for about 10 years. And it seems to me that right now, not only do we have sort of a bad crop of movies, but film criticism is fading as an art form, and probably criticism in general is fading as an art form. And to a certain degree, I blame TV critics. They make you feel that if you come out of a movie and your response to a movie is either, I laughed, I cried, or, gosh, you know, I really cared about that horse, then you've had, a profound critical response to a movie. What they're doing is reducing things to thumbs up, thumbs down. That is not and has never been what criticism is about. And I think that at this point in time, people think that it is. And people are impatient with anything that's more in depth, that's broader, that's sort of more that has more cultural backing.
Well, when was the last time you saw The King and I?
probably about 7 years ago. You know, it didn't scare me a bit this time.
Hey, good. Stephen, thanks a lot.
Sure, pleasure.
Fresh Air film critic Stephen Schiff, he spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in New York. This is Fresh Air.